Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Colleen Pilar and I'm here with Julie Fudge-Smith. And today we're talking about choosing a trainer. It's not as simple as just, you know, Googling and finding who's closest to you. You really want to find a trainer that's the right match for your family, for your training style, for your dog. So what do you tell people, Julie, when they say they're looking to find a good trainer to help them with their dog's behavior?
Well, I usually tell them to call me.
That's a good thing to start with.
It's kind of like, you're looking for a trainer? Gosh, I think I know one. But what I do, when I'm talking to people, for example, who live out of state or whatever, what I tell them is that you want to look for a trainer who's going to be humane and compassionate to both you and your dog.
Yes.
And so you want to look for somebody who uses methods that are compatible with humane treatment. Mainly, you want to look for somebody who claims to be a positive reinforcement trainer and that who uses a lot of food in training. Mm-hmm. And people look at me and go, gosh, I don't want to use food. And I'm like, well, what I usually tell my clients who are hesitant is like, you do actually feed the dog every day, right? And they're like, yeah. I said, okay, all I'm asking you to do here is to be creative in how you feed your dog so that instead of dumping everything into the bowl, we're going to use it as a motivation to sit or to lay down or to reward those desirable behaviors. So I really think the most important choice and the thing that's going to steer you towards a trainer who's going to be positive and affirmative towards you and your dog is to look for somebody who's willing to use a lot of food, at least in the beginning, mm-hmm. for training your dog. What about you?
I think that's a really good starting point. It's a funny thing because food is a hot button topic in the subject of training.
It is.
My dog should just listen to me because he loves me. Okay. But you do really want to work on reinforcement history and relationship here. And,
that's
and the
right.
food can be a piece of that. It's not that you're buying the love. It's that you're setting up situations in which we can create good, fun learning. And learning should be fun.
It should.
Learning should be fun. And I think that that is one of the mistakes that we see a lot in dog training is there are the people who believe that learning should be fun. And there are people who believe that thou shalt obey me under all circumstances at all times and must be perfect. And that is unrealistic and often very unkind.
Correct.
So we really want to look for a trainer who is really setting setting your dog up for success. And there are some really good questions for that. There's a trainer named Jean Donaldson who runs an academy for dog trainers, and it's a really good program. She has three questions that she particularly encourages people to ask, and I think that they're excellent because they can help. You know, anybody's website is going to sound like, yay, I'm positive and effective and I do good things. But when you start talking to people, if you use these three questions, it will give you a better idea of whether this trainer fits your values and your comfort level. And so her three questions are, what exactly happens to my dog when she gets something right? So the answer might be nothing. It might be she gets a pat on the head. Might be that you smile at her. Or it might be she gets treats. Which one would your dog like best? Then what exactly happens to her when she gets it wrong? The answer might be nothing. The answer might be we yank on her collar. The answer might be we yell. The answer might be we make ugly faces at her and stare at her and lean over her and do, you know, intimidating postures. Might be we zap her with an electronic shock. What of those fits your moral values? And then the third question is, are there any less invasive alternatives to what you propose? So when you're asking these, you know, about a specific behavior and the trainer is suggesting these options, saying, well, are there any less invasive alternatives is a really good way of looking at that because we want to have whatever would be our gentlest and most humane solutions to behavior problems. So I really like those three questions because I think they can clarify for people whether a trainer is going to fit with your own personal philosophy. And in the end, it's going to come down to that.
I agree. And I especially like the, are there any less invasive alternatives to what you propose? Because if somebody were to ask me that, I'm like, well, no, because I'm not invasive. You know, I suppose I could give more treats. That might be less invasive. But I think that if you really stump somebody like that because they are so attuned to using positive reinforcement, that will tell you that their default after that is not to go straight to punishment.
Right.
So I think that that is a really intriguing question to me. I did want to back up just a second because I think food is really important. And I think the first answer to this is, what exactly happens to my dog when she gets it right? She should get a treat. And I think when people say, I want my dog to do it because they love me, I tell them, you know, we build a lot of relationships around food. How many times do you say to somebody, let's go out for coffee, let's do lunch, would you like to have dinner? So if we build relationships over food with people, why can't we build our relationship with our dog over food? And so, that, go ahead.
Just a really interesting side note. Kathy Sudeo wrote a really good book called Plenty and Life is Free.
I love that book.
I learned that the word companion means the one with whom you share food. Pan, food, bread.
Right.
Companion. And I thought, oh, that's perfect, because it is true that food is a huge part of building relationships, human to dog relationships, human to cat relationships, any kind of relationships. Food does play a really big role in bonding. So it's fascinating to me that the word companion really does come down to who I eat with, who
right.
I share with.
Because calm is with. Mm-hmm. So companion is with food, with bread. So
right.
I love that. The other thing is, I loved what you said about fun, because the three questions, what exactly happens to my dog when she gets it right? She should be having fun. You should be having fun. She should really like getting a treat. You should want to give her a treat for doing what you ask her to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell my clients, if this is not fun, you need to tell me. Because we need to fix that immediately. So that means there's something seriously wrong here, and we need to take a look at that. So I think that those two points about food, building relationships, and if it's not fun, and it should be fun, tie really closely to those three questions as something you should be thinking about. So what exactly happens to my dog when she gets it right? We should be having fun. And if we're not having fun, then there's something wrong.
And I think that the fun question, now, not every second of dog training is fun,
No. And
we'll all agree with that, but the overall feeling is fun. That has the extra ripple of, a really good dog trainer has good people skills too.
Correct.
Because a lot of dog training, there are people, I regularly get clients who come to me and they say, well, we tried classes before, but, well, you know, my dog was okay, but I failed. I was really bad. I couldn't do anything right. And if that is your feeling walking away from class, your trainer wasn't effectively working with you as a person.
Right.
And so we really, really want to have trainers who teach learning skills to dogs and teach learning skills to people, because you're both learning new techniques and it should be fun for both of you.
Right, right. I agree completely. And one of the things that I was thinking, I had one client one time, I was at a pet sitting conference, and it wasn't a client, it was another person. And she said to me, oh, I'm just, the reason I like pet sitting is as soon as I can get away from the person and get to the animal is what I really want. And I looked at her and I said, then why are you in the pet sitting business? Because you're taking care of people's dogs. And in training, it's the same thing. And if you don't like people, then you need to get another job, like maybe data entry. Because I have not yet had a dog write me a check.
Yes.
You know, or hand me a credit. Well, actually, I did teach a dog to hand a credit card. It was a service dog. But nonetheless, the credit card had to be given to the dog to hand to me. So you got to really like people. And you have to be motivated to work with them. Because what I'm aiming for, and it's a terrible business model, but what I'm aiming for as a trainer is to give you skills for a lifetime of learning with your dog. So that eventually you're not going to need me, which, like I said, is a terrible business model. But it's the model that I work towards, because I want people to have fun and enjoy learning and living with their dog for the entire life of the dog. So it's important that you have fun. It's important that you don't feel as if you're failing, but as if I'm making some success, because that's what's going to motivate you to continue to work with your dog and to have a working relationship throughout your dog's life.
So then when we are looking for a trainer, some things you can do. First off, you can ask friends and neighbors. Mm-hmm. Because word of mouth references can be very helpful to finding who makes people happy, who has effective skills, who's in your area, that kind of thing. Talking to your vet about who's in the area, good mm-hmm. options too. And of course, our friend Google. But yeah. Recognizing, of course, that all of those are your starting point, and that you're going to then need to make contact on your own and ask some questions and find out some things. So there are different – first off, anybody can hang up a shingle and say, I'm a dog trainer.
Right.
Anyone of our listeners today can just do that right now. Tomorrow, you are a dog trainer because you have decided so. And that's good and bad. I mean, there are some good parts about that, and that people can learn and grow into this career. And there are some also parts that we worry about whether people are properly educated and doing the right things. Dog training is a profession. You want someone who takes it very, very seriously. So there are lots and lots of different certifications for dog trainers. The Association of Professional Dog Trainers has a list on their website of letters that you might find after a dog trainer's name. And I was looking at that the other day and was stunned to find there are 85 different options.
85.
And we'll put a link to that in the show notes. So those letters, you know, they're for different programs, different certifications, different things like that. There are a few independent boards that provide certifications for dog trainers. So there are academies that train trainers and then provide letters. So you've, you know, gone through our program and you get these letters. And then there's some independent boards where they assess the knowledge that you've gathered throughout all mm-hmm. of your learning. So different things mean different things. But the first thing I'll tell you is that if there are letters after a dog trainer's name, it means that they're taking it seriously, that they're
correct.
Interested in their own education, their own, you know, development as a trainer. So we can put a link in so you can find out what some of those letters mean. But the big thing to be thinking about is this a little hobby just for fun, winging it kind of thing? Or is this something people are taking seriously? And you want a dog trainer who's very, very committed and passionate to learning as much as they can about dog behavior, about changing behavior, and about people.
Absolutely. One of the things is it's not enough. In fact, it's really not all that important whether how much you love dogs all your life or whether you had them when you were growing up. What do you know about the science of dog training? Who have you taken seminars from? Some of the things that these people, and a serious dog trainer, somebody who sees it as a profession, is going to have a website. So if they don't have a website, that might be your first indication that this is not something that they take seriously. Ask them about their continuing education. Some of the key names to think about, you want to hear from them, are things like Patricia McConnell, Pat Miller, Ken Ramirez, Steve Wright, Karen Pryor, Ian Dunbar. There are a lot of great names out there for people who are well-known in the dog training world, especially for positive reinforcement. And you want to make sure that these people are continuing their education and staying on top of learning about what's new and what's effective in dog training. Because I know you and I are both CPDTs, and that requires that we do a certain amount of continuing education over the course of 3 years. And you have to submit those and have them approved so that they know you're staying on top of things. And I think it also includes some dog handling classes that we have to take. Mm-hmm. And so you want to make sure that this is a trainer who not only is well-educated, but continues their education and stays vested in the dog training world and is willing to say, this is who I've studied with, and, you know, sort of put their credentials right up front. So I think that's one thing to look for. And ask them what their credentials mean. Mm-hmm. When I sit down for an orientation in my beginning class, I tell people, I'm a CPDTKA. What does that mean? And so I explain to them what that means, what the certification means, and that most importantly, it means that I'm serious about dog training and that I've invested a fair amount of time, energy, and I guess love into this profession. Right. So I think
and I do personally feel that the letters behind my name mean the most to me rather than my clients. Like, I don't think that they particularly care, and I don't really expect them to care. But what they matter to me from the perspective of that learning is important to me, and that having some way of evaluating it against the body of knowledge is important to me, so that I can then say, okay, I do actually know something here. So yes. that can be yes. an important part of this. So having a trainer who belongs to a professional organization is a good indication of this as well, you know, that they are serious about it.
I was just going to say the two that first come to my mind are the Association of Pet Dog Trainers and the Pet Professional Guild.
Yes, and the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants is becoming a bigger one too.
Right.
So didn't APDT change it to Association of Professional Dog Trainers a couple
years
ago?
Yes, I think that's what I said. Did I say
you said pet dog trainers, which was the original name, and I thought they had changed it.
They had. You're right.
Said it, I was like, maybe they didn't.
It's the Association of Professional Dog Trainers.
That's an interesting discussion, too. Let's veer off on that topic for a minute. Because APDT's original name, Association of Pet Dog Trainers, was deliberately chosen because pet dog training is a specific niche in training.
Correct.
There's service dog training, and there's movie dog training, and there's all sorts of specific tasks, bomb detection, and all sorts of things. But you know what the hardest one is? Pet dog training, because you're getting any kind of dog living in any kind of environment with people with any level of skills. And your job is to walk in and make it work. So there is a particular magic to being drawn to that and to enjoying working with families and enjoying finding the unique solutions that will work for this dog in this house with this family. So they did switch the title to professional dog trainers a couple years ago, and that is in fact what we are, members of an association that are professional dog trainers. But this specific thought of, you know, pet dogs, they're important.
They are.
They really enrich our lives. And so you want a trainer who has the skills to develop a program that's going to work for your family, your dog, and your home. And those variables, the number of variables we're looking at are tremendous.
Yeah, I tell people I'm a family dog trainer, and they're like, what do you do? Agility, do that? I said, well, I can help you at the beginning of all that stuff, but I got to tell you, none of the extracurriculars are going to happen if the dog doesn't stay in the family. And I don't know what the percentage is, but it's got to be greater than 95% of all family dogs are not going to do the extracurricular activities. They are not going to become rallyo dogs, and they're not going to be doing serious agility, and they're not going to be doing competition obedience. They just want their dog to come when they call, not pull on the leash, and sit when grandma comes through the door. So I think that you're right, that family dog or pet dog training is really the first step in training as well. So, you know, ask the person you're talking to, your trainer, getting back to our trainer search, is what is your specialty? You know, and if they say, oh, well, it's agility, you ask them, do you do general obedience or family dog training? Because if that's what you're looking for, get somebody whose specialty is family dog training. So that's another good question to ask is what is your specialty and why do you do it?
So occasionally people will ask all of those questions and then they say, like, do you think I'm crazy because I'm asking about, you know, your background, your certification and, you know, all that. And we're like, no, that's great. That's wonderful. Go for it.
Yes.
But it is interesting that most people don't ask any questions.
No,
most
they don't.
Just sort of sign up and go, great, okay. And that's good if you're a good match. It's not so good if it's not the right trainer. So, I mean, I do want people to be a little bit more cautious in their initial commitment. You know, like think about, is this the right trainer for you? Many trainers will let you come and watch a class. Not all can accommodate that with their facilities or their accommodations, but many will. Most would be willing to speak to you on the phone or exchange emails to talk about some of their background. Nobody's, you know, anybody who's defensive or doesn't want to talk about this probably isn't the right trainer for you.
That's
so
right.
It's totally fair to ask your questions.
And it's also fair to ask for references. You know, if they say, can I come watch a class? Well, you know, for example, in my facility, that's a little difficult to do without being disruptive to the class. So depending on the class, I may say, yes, you can't come to the beginning class because that's too disruptive. But you can come watch my intermediate class because the dogs are more focused. So that's going to show you where you're headed. Or I say, I'm happy to provide references of clients, both private and group clients, who you can talk to and find out if you know, they like what I do. And the other thing is going back to having a website, there should be testimonials on their website as well. There should be people saying, you know, this is a great dog. Maybe you can, for example, I'm a member of Thumbtack, and people can leave reviews for me. And if they leave a review, good or bad, it goes up on my site. So in the, I don't know how many years I've been a member of Thumbtack, I've had only one mediocre review. The rest have all been five-star reviews. So that's another thing, is find out what their social media is like. What are people saying about them on Facebook? What are they saying on Facebook? Are they a member of anything other like Thumbtack or LinkedIn or someplace else where you can get some feedback that's not purposely put up there by the trainer? That's a good, another good area to look at.
Mm-hmm. So the subject that we've only sort of tangentially touched on is that there are trainers who are going to use methods that are harsh or inappropriate or fear-based methods. And we would say never. Don't.
Correct.
Stay far, far, far away from those. So when, you know, when you're talking to a trainer and they're talking about, you know, that they can make things happen or that they can guarantee their results, those are actually tricky buzzwords, and you want to be really careful about them because they typically imply an escalating level of force and often some methods that are less than desirable and possibly even very, very dangerous and could increase the likelihood of aggression or behavioral problems in your dog. So we're very, very strongly advocating the buzzword is positive reinforcement trainer. Unfortunately, so many people now say that even when they're not, that we get stuck in there in the vocabulary.
Right. So ask them. The question is, if they say
they're
the positive
reinforcement.
Right. But you can also ask them, what methods are you actually going to use to train my dog? Like, for example, if I want to train my dog to sit at my side, how do you do that? And what happens if he doesn't do it? You can give them a specific question about a specific behavior that you want and ask them to describe the methods they're going to use. So even if they say positive reinforcement, that's going to give you a much better idea of what they're talking about.
The question I used to encourage people to ask, because I thought it was very telling, is what will you do to teach my dog not to jump on guests?
Right.
Because the answers from the two different camps come out in totally different totally different philosophies.
Right.
So that can be a very telling question. But, you know, regardless, you want to make sure that you're feeling like this is a safe and ethical choice. And if you ever have a doubt about that, that is a moment to, you know, put the pause button on, because
right.
It matters, you know, in a moment. Years ago, many, many, many years ago, before I knew better, I took a dog training class as a student. I was not yet a trainer, and it was your traditional choke chain, loose leash walking training. And they took my dog as a demonstration and walked her around the circle. And every time she looked at me, they gave her a collar correction, yanked on her, and went, "No, mommy," like, because I was apparently mommy. I had never thought of myself as mommy, but, and so basically every time she looked at me, she was punished with a really sharp choke chain correction to teach her to walk nicely on leash. It broke my heart. It was so traumatic for me. And I didn't know what was happening. Like, at the time, I didn't
right.
even really know how to train loose leash walking, but I had handed over my dog feeling safe that nothing bad could happen to her in the hands of the instructor. And I basically watched someone abuse my dog for a minute, probably. It wasn't that long, but it's been more than 20 years, and I can remember this so vividly. I totally remember it. It was awful. So you want to make sure that whatever's happening is all within your ethics.
Correct. There's a couple of other buzzwords that I like to bring to the forefront for people to think about. If somebody says they're a balanced trainer, that's always a red flag for me, because that usually means that they try to combine methods. They may throw, you know, use some treats, but they're also not against using aversives or force. So they call themselves balanced because they both punish and reward. run from that, because that's just going to be a highly confusing state for your dog and really not one you want to get into. And then the other one is when people call punishments corrections. Mm-hmm. I'm just correcting his behavior. No, I kind of think you're hurting him. Usually most corrections require, like you said, a choke chain or a shock or something so that the dog is actually in pain or hurt or in fear. And that is not where I want to head with my dog. So beware of the words balanced and correction, because they may be veering in a direction you don't want to go.
Right. So that said, there are lots and lots and lots of wonderful trainers out there.
Absolutely.
And they're not that hard to find if you do your research and do a little looking around and ask some questions. So we encourage you to do that. Through my Living with Kids and Dogs website, I get lots of emails from people who are not in my area. So people are like, well, I'm looking for a trainer. And one service I have offered people, and I'm totally willing to offer to anyone who listens to this podcast, is that if you would email me a short description of the problem you're having and your zip code, I am more than willing to look at the various resources that I use, the APDT website, the IAABC website, the PPG website, the Family Paws website, and of course, Facebook, where I know a bazillion trainers, and see if there's a trainer that I know
in your area.
And even if I don't know one super close to you, I can probably get one close enough that that trainer can refer someone who can help you, you know. So that is completely an option I'm happy to do. Our email address is feedback@yourfamilydogpodcast.com. So if you email us at feedback@yourfamilydogpodcast.com and tell us what you're dealing with, you know, so I have a dog who, you know, runs out the front door, or I have a dog who just needs basic obedience, or I'm expecting a baby and want to help my dog get set up for success, whatever's going on, give me just a one sentence summary of that. And where you live, zip code's helpful because I am very geographically challenged. So it's like one state over, right? You know, it's like 5 miles over the state line. That's super close. I have no idea. So if it's a zip code, I can find things with searches because the internet is not geographically challenged. It helps me. So that is an option too.
That's a great option. And yes, I do something similar. People will ask me, you know, I need a trainer in my area. And I will tell them, okay, if you want to do a zip code search at the APDT website or the PPG website, and then send me, you know, what you came up with. And I'll, you know, we'll take a look at the trainers and I'll tell you which ones I think would be worth some further investigation. Because even if we recommend somebody, unless we know them personally or we've worked with them, you still are going to have to ask these questions.
Oh, yeah. You have to ask the questions regardless.
Because it could be that they answer all the questions right, but you two don't get along. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's perfectly understandable, too. I don't know. You are the nicest person I know, so you probably like everyone you meet. Me, being not the nicest person that I know, do not like every person that I meet. And that's not, even if you have all the right training methods, I might not want to work with you because you annoy me. So, not you, personally. You don't annoy me at all, Colleen. But that's something to think about, too, is that you have to get along with the trainer, so it might well be worth it, even if they've got every credential that you want, is talk to them on the phone and see right. if there's... you know, some sort of simpatico between you. I think a couple of links that we will put on the show notes. Let's do a link to Kathy Sadeo's book.
Yes.
Some Things in Life Are Free. I also wrote a blog.
Plenty in Life is Free.
What?
I think it's Plenty in Life is Free.
Is it? Yeah, is that it? I don't know.
It is. Okay. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, we both look back
she
at our work.
She will forgive us if we... Yeah, we did just both peek over our shoulders, look at our own bookshelves.
You're right. I think it is Plenty and Life is Free. And I actually wrote a blog about it, so we can put my link to the blog,
right,
too. Because I also talk about other things like Nylif, as well as, you know, Some Things in Life and Free, or so on and so forth. So we'll put a link to Kathy's book in my blog, to a link to APDT, IAABC, PPG, Family Paws, all places you can do a beginning search for a trainer. There's also, I just wrote a blog on how to choose a trainer. So we'll put that up. And also within that was a really terrific article that was put up by Companion Animal Psychology, literally titled How to Choose a Dog Trainer. It's a very long article, well worth the read, because they go into a great deal of detail about questions to ask and things to look for in a trainer. We'll put a link to the companion animal psychology article as well.
Yeah, that's a very, it is a, it's well worth a read.
Well worth a read. It is long. It's like 12, I'm going to warn you, it's 12 pages, so read the whole thing. so you can do it. I know you can.
They've already invested 30 minutes in listening to us babble about it. So
that's
they
right.
We can get 12 pages done.
I hope so. I hope so. And then we're going to make you write a book report on it and submit it in feedback.
So but, in the end, I think our main points are good dog trainers like dogs.
Yes.
They like them. They enjoy normal dog behavior. And good dog trainers like people. So that's what you're looking for. You're looking for someone who celebrates dogs and likes to channel their natural instincts and likes to give them direction,
right,
not just suppress, suppress, suppress. And you're looking for someone who wants to come and work with you and who enjoys their time spent with you so that you and your dog will both enjoy working with your trainer.
Absolutely. Okay, I think that's it. I think we'll see you next week. Have a great weekend, Colleen.
You too. See you later.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.
Have you visited our website lately? In addition to our previous episodes, we also have a list of resources that you and your dog may enjoy. Check it out at yourfamilydogpodcast.com.